Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Ducey. I'm here with Jared Oliphant, and today we're going to be speaking about Beyond the Control of God, Six Views on the Problem of God and Abstract Objects. It's in the Bloomsbury Studies in Philosophy of Religion series. You can find it in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle. It was published in 2014, as you might expect, by Bloomsbury Academic. Jared, tell us about this book.
This was a lot of fun to read. I was doing a paper on both, it ended up being on Molinism and abstract objects. And so I noticed that this book was recommended by some people online, so I wanted to take a look at it. But first, I guess, asking why does this book exist in the first place? Why are people discussing it, talking about it? I won't go into all the detail that I did on, you know, like the Molinism episode. That was a quite lengthy prologue, but I do want to give just a little bit of introduction because on Reform Forum, we haven't really talked about this issue before. So I just want to give an overview so that we don't have to just assume that going into it and maybe add to some of the confusion. But to start out, I just want to give a little bit of background. And I'm going to just read a quote by Aquinas to get us started. It's from the Summa. And Aquinas is asking whether God knows things other than himself. And he says, this is a quote, "The power of anything can be perfectly known only by knowing to what its power extends. Since, therefore, the divine power extends to other things by the very fact that it is the first effective cause of all things, God must necessarily know things other than himself." So, of course, God does know other things. He's just laying out how that can be the case and what that involves. God knows them necessarily because he knows what his own power can extend toward. That's what Aquinas is going for. Now, this idea helped set the model for theology proper, doctrine of God, in the scholastic tradition, and that scholastic tradition was in both the Roman Catholic tradition and Protestant tradition as well, Protestant tradition including both the Reformed tradition and the Arminian tradition. So it's pretty extensive, this idea of God necessarily knowing the things to which his power extends was pretty broad and adopted by trans denominations, I guess you could say. So for our purposes, the mainstream Reform tradition uses the categories of God's necessary knowledge and his free knowledge. We talked about this a little bit when we were getting into middle knowledge and Molinism last time, if you heard that. But I'm pretending like it's last time for me. It wasn't the last Reform media review, but from my memory, it's last time. But just again, a quick overview. His necessary knowledge includes knowledge of himself and that to which his power extends, as Aquinas said. So where's the problem here? Everything so far so good, pretty much. In the 20th century, a lot of philosophers of religion began to recognize that stating things in this way, in the way that Aquinas states them, it seemed to suggest that before anything was created at all, there were two categories of things. There's God, obviously, and then there are things to which his power extends. And those latter abstract things seem to be talked about in a way that makes them uncreated and eternal, kind of coexisting with God. So how can that be, given that God is ase, or that he's independent, you know, he's simple, all the classical attributes? So that's the discussion that the book enters into and wants to take a look at, and it culls from a few different traditions to try to get at the question. So it's not exactly a six views book, but because there are six different people who are looking at this issue, a couple of the people can kind of fit into maybe a couple categories, and I'll get into that. But there are six contributors. There's six chapters, and each contributor lays out his respective case at the beginning of each chapter. Then all the other contributors respond,
okay,
and then the original contributor can weigh in and give a reaction there at the end.
So there is interaction among the contributors.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the things that makes the book very helpful because, as I'm going to say later, this is a good introduction to the topic if you're somewhat familiar with some philosophical categories. Like I just mentioned, if you are reading about God's necessary knowledge, free knowledge, even middle knowledge, if you are somewhat familiar with the scholastic categories, or if you're familiar with some of the work that Plantinga has done in the 20th century. Some of you may be familiar that in Nature of Necessity, Plantinga, he was more or less a Platonist and said that things like propositions and impossible worlds and those kinds of things just exist, that God doesn't have control over whether those things exist. They're kind of this Platonic horde that coexists
with God. Like a plenum or something like that, right? Some realm in which these things exist alongside of God, but maybe outside of his control, or somehow exist without the need of his control.
Right, exactly. Maybe to be helpful, I want to get into who is discussing these things in a second, but I'll just read, just piggybacking on your point, Camden. There is Paul Gould is the editor here, and he has a very, very good introduction in this book where he goes through a lot of the things that I'm saying and wants to just give an overview before people get into the nitty-gritty that all the contributors weigh in. So I'm just going to read a couple of the principles that he wants to build off of. And one of the first, I guess, principles you could say, that you could say is there's the aseity sovereignty doctrine. And that reads as 2 points. One, God does not depend on anything distinct from himself for existing. And second, everything distinct from God depends on God's creative activity for its existing. So that's the basic principle that is reflecting, I guess, traditional theism. And then on that same page, he has this inconsistent triad where there are three points, and depending on which point you affirm or deny, that's going to place you in the different categories that the contributors fall into. So the first one is abstract objects exist. That could be a form of Platonism if you affirm number one. The second is, if abstract objects exist, then they are dependent on God. And the third one is, if abstract objects exist, then they are independent of God. So those are your options, really, of belief regarding abstract objects and their relationship to God. So
now, this might be a dumb question, but when they say exist, are they talking about some sort of subsistence? They mean in some other way other than conceptually? Or is that itself a debated point?
It's kind of a debated point. The general categories are concrete and abstract. So it wouldn't be, you know, it's not existence in the sense of like this table or something like that. So it would be something that there are different properties and features of abstract objects, and those are debated too. But generally, it's something that you can't touch, feel, you know, that's incorporeal, those types of attributes.
But so there is some measure of subsistence to them other than just an idea. Like you're conceptualizing them. Like I can think of some sort of an abstract cat, you know, for example, but that, you know, there's at least in terms of the problem of universals, historically speaking, there's a debate on whether the abstract cat exists. Now, Plato would have one idea, conceptualists would have another, some would be nominalists and just say, well, it's just something you're talking about, but it doesn't exist. Is that in the purview of this book as well?
Yeah, and that's debated. I mean, to your example, an abstract cat, you could say whatever you're thinking of, was that in God's power to either think about or reference in some way? So in one sense, I think planning, I need to be careful in how I talk about this, but planning, I think, says something like, in one sense, there isn't such a thing as non-existence, because you would have to be referencing something for it to non-exist, and that's impossible. So I'm not characterizing that very robustly, but something along those sorts. So that's also, I mean, the property of existence, whether it can even be a property, that's definitely related. It's a little bit in the background, but yeah, I mean, basically what you're articulating is what is debated. Nominalism obviously comes up in this.
Sure.
Too. So maybe I'll just go through some of the cast of characters here. The first one that's mentioned, Keith Yandell, he kicks it off after the introduction, and he is professor emeritus at University of Wisconsin, and he also is an adjunct at TEDS currently, and he argues for Platonic theism. So that's going to be pretty close to what Plantinga was arguing for in Nature of Necessity. All roads kind of lead back to Plantinga in some sense. I'm overstating it, but kind of. And then you have, after that, Paul Gould, and he's a professor at Southwestern Baptist Seminary, and he co-authors with Richard Brian Davis, who teaches at Tyndale University in Toronto. And they argue for a modified theistic activism, where there are abstract objects distinct from God, but they are the product of God's creative activity. And that gets very complex. If you're at all interested, if it matters, that's kind of the view that I hold to, but it's going to be a pretty different version of what they argue for, because they go into some details where I definitely depart from them in some sense. And then after that, Greg Welty, who is a professor at Southeastern Baptist Seminary, he argues for theistic conceptual realism. And that's where divine thoughts play the role of abstract objects with respect to created reality, but they exist as uncreated objects within the divine mind. So you kind of have a hybrid there. And then William Lane Craig is a contributor. He's professor at Talbot, pretty obviously well known. And he argues for, I shouldn't say he argues for nominalism, even though he might accept that. It's more that he argues against the realism of abstract objects, because there's also a debate over whether what Craig argues for is historic nominalism in the sense of what Occam was doing. There's some discontinuity and continuity there. But anyway, he's arguing against the realism of abstract objects. And then the second to last contributor, Scott Shalkowski, he teaches at the University of Leeds, and he argues that there's insufficient reasons for thinking that abstract objects exist, but he doesn't believe that their existence would be a problem theologically. So he has a different take on it. And then lastly, there's an atheist that weighs in, and his name is Graham Oppie, and he's a professor at Monash University. So he's obviously going to have a very different take on it, and he's really looking at it and going, okay, does the existence or non-existence of abstract objects contribute to an argument for or against God? And so that's what he's concerned to deal with. He's less concerned with their existence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are the contributors. And they're, like I said, they're interacting with each other. I didn't want to make this review a book report, just a review really. So I'm not going to go into all the point counterpoints that they do in the book, because it gets very technical. It gets you have to keep track of a lot of lines of argumentation, and no pun intended, it can get pretty abstract in some places. So I'll let the reader, the curious reader, get into those things, because it can be pretty tedious in an audio review. But I'll just mention a couple things to kind of pique your interest if you are interested in the book. One thing that kind of surprised me was William Lane Craig actually gives a very impressive layout of his argument, at least to start off, I thought. And the reason I say that is he offers an argument that it pulls from the exegetical evidence, the historical and creedal evidence for what he's going to argue for, and the philosophical evidence. So I really liked seeing that. He used scripture, he used the creeds, he used a lot of things at his disposal. And I wouldn't count myself, obviously, a nominalist, but what he argues for is he wants to uphold a very strong and consistent doctrine of creation ex nihilo. So the way he does that, I thought to be encouraging. Now, again, that's the reason it's kind of surprising, is because there are definitely some things that I differ with Craig on. Obviously, he's going to be a Molinist, and there's some other thing, you know, apologetic method. We'd have some things to talk about. But that was a highlight for me, because I felt like, okay, I can get on board with what he's saying as far as really wanting to uphold a classical doctrine and the attributes of God. So that was one thing to look for, I guess. The other thing that kind of surprised me, even though it probably shouldn't have, was the lack of historical sources and exegetical evidence overall. So Craig's comments were like a bright spot, and I just would have liked to have seen a little bit more interaction with some of the scholastic sources that had talked about this, So, you know, this is a book that's philosophy of religion, and that's obviously going to be bent in a philosophical way. But so I'm not saying that it needs to be systematic or that it needs to have a bunch of Bible verses attached to it. But I still think I would have liked to have seen a balance overall between philosophy, exegesis, and systematics, and some of the historical sources as well. So those were a couple of things. Last thing I'll say on it is specifically for Reformed Forum listeners, there's an interesting exchange really throughout the book with the various contributors, and that's over the interpretation of Colossians 1:16 and 17. And that gets used a lot in this discussion. And just to jog your memory, those verses read, "For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him, and he is before all things, and in him all things hold together." So the question that was debated, that continually gets debated, is whether all things applies to abstract objects or not. And the reason this is interesting for Reform Forum listeners is because they're talking about principles of hermeneutics, I guess you should say. And so, you know, whether the biblical author, human author, had in his mind abstract objects or not, that question gets bandied about. And it's interesting because some people assume that that's the way to figure out whether that meaning or the meaning of the verse actually applies to abstract objects. And Craig and others make the very valid point where is all things unrestricted or not? That's the question that you should ask. So that, you know, all things doesn't apply, Craig says, to corks or you know, automobiles or other kinds of things that the biblical author clearly didn't have in mind. But that doesn't mean that those things are then out of bounds. So it's an interesting hermeneutical discussion, like I said, that kind of is a running thread throughout some of the contributors that some Reform Forum listeners might be interested in, given a lot of the discussions that we've had on hermeneutics as well. And just to give you a little sneak peek, I eventually want to do a review on Brian Leftow's new book, or a recent book, I should say, called God and Necessity. So we're going to be talking about this issue again, which is one of the reasons I wanted to do this book first and then get into Leftow's book later. So that's great. That's a summary.
Jared had a review back in September on Molinism, the Contemporary Debate. You can find that in Reformed Media Review episode number 86. This book, of course, Beyond the Control of God, Six Views on the Problem of God and Abstract Objects. It's published by Bloomsbury Academic. Street price, about $114 hardcover, $27 paperback, and under $15 on Kindle. So there's a lot of different options there for you. But more of a technical book, wouldn't you say, Jared, for people that are interested in this particular subject?
Yeah, that's right. If you've been following at least some of the discussion here, then you'd be interested. If it's not at all interesting to you, then probably not the best thing to pick up right now.
You don't have to force yourself to like it.
Right, exactly.
Well, great. Thanks so much for the review. We want to thank everybody for listening. This has been the Reformed Media Review.